Hello, lovely podcast listeners. Welcome back to 10 Things I Hate About, an Outlander podcast, and a big hello to our new listeners. We're delighted to have you here. As you probably recognise by now, I'm Sharon, and alongside me is my amazing podcast partner, Ruth. And this week's episode follows the second half of season two, from the Fox's Lair to Dragonfly in Amber. Enjoy!
We all have our favourite shows, but there's always something that comes along that means you like it a little less. The technical term is the Scrappy-Doo effect. Two friends create a safe space to talk about their favourite show, Outlander, all the things they love and some of the things they hate. Although we all love Outlander, there are things we hate. Admit it, there's always something. So we've created a safe space, a space for all Outlander lovers to share their dark secrets, but mainly it's a space to share ours. Every week we'll discuss episodes, their themes, feminism, what we love, and every week we'll talk about something we hate. Roger. Yep, we hate him. But let's be clear, we don't hate Rick Rankin. We have a clear grasp on reality. So join us, gentle viewer. Join Sharon and Ruth, two England-based Outlander fans, as they discuss love, hate, and time travel.
Hello.
Hello, Sharon.
How are we doing?
We're not too bad. Not too bad, thank you.
This has been a stressful second half of a season.
Yeah. And also I feel like the weather in this second half of the season is quite reflective of the current weather in the UK, which is...
Oh my God, it so is.
Mucky, horrible, torrential rain.
Absolute so misery.
I feel like I can really relate to the Jacobite army trudging through the mud and wet.
I know, it really is. Like, I feel like you just, every time I look at this season, I'm like, oh, do you just want a hot shower? Like,
I know.
Every time I look at Jamie, I'm just like, I just want to bathe him or something.
I know. I have to say that it is the one thing that I, you know, when Claire is deciding whether to go back to the future or to stay, I would have to think, I'd be thinking, yeah, but you know, there's deodorant. that would really cross my mind. People must have
hot tass.
Really smelled.
Yeah, it is literally all. I think when I see, you know, when he puts all that that black stuff on his face.
Yeah.
Every time he does it, I'm going, oh, how's he going to wash it off now? That's literally where my mind goes.
When they're kneeling down, it's like, look at the state of his knees. Filthy. Absolutely filthy.
He needs a scrubbing.
I feel like we're maybe focusing on the wrong. Listeners, please don't worry. We haven't changed this podcast from a discussion of Outlander to a discussion of Outlander's hygiene. This is a mere segue.
Yeah, and we do, it is fairly obvious from the very first second that we're back in Scotland now.
Yeah.
From the start of this half, I think.
Yeah, I mean, it's, there's so much kind of visually that shows that. Like, even, I think, I was thinking, you know, the colours where you've got all these rich colours when they're in France, and now we've got all these subdued colours. And when they're in France, they're inside a lot. They're inside these beautiful rooms, and then suddenly they're outside, and it's kind of this, we've gone from glamour to muck. I know we're going back to hygiene, apologies. But yeah, I mean, there's so much that, yeah, the whole tonal shift. And I think in it's a way you obvious, kind yeah. of... And then you've got this kind of this weird kind of carrying of grief that they bring with them from losing faith. But then this real sense of foreboding of like more, like I think this half a season is really drenched in grief and misery.
Yeah, it really, like you have that tiny, tiny little bit of happiness at the start of the Fox's Lair, like where they're like back in Lollybrock, where she talks about like you know, our hearts are healing.
Yeah.
You know, we're with family again, and you just get a real good sense of, you know, them just being really in love again after like all the heartache that they had to endure, and fraught like situations with, you know, there was so much that happened. There was like constantly being apart from each other, losing their daughter, Claire, you know, having to rescue Jamie, like her having to murder someone and then also sleep with someone to get him out. And like, it was just so real heavy stuff. And you're just like, okay, so now they're spending a lot. And you can just see that in those first few scenes, even though it's just so short lived, like the way he glances at her, you know, when she's speaking, he's like staring up at her. He's got his arm all around her all the time, constantly like looking for reasons to touch her. You know, they're kissing quite openly, which they've never really done in front of Jenny and Ian before. And you can just, you're just like, it's almost like, you're just like, oh, what's going to happen now? Because things are way too good. And then suddenly, boom, it just comes out of nowhere. And Jamie's like, right, we got to, you know, got to get involved
just
now.
Just like back into it. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, you're kind of straight back into, right, we're back now with the Jacobites. You know, and this tension is building again in a different way. Because you didn't feel as close to the war in France, because it almost like there was a country between them, but now that they're back in Scotland, you're like, where they're really close now to...
and it is the genuine kind of build up to it all, where they are, you know, starting it all. I think something that I think they capture really quite well in this is how slow it all must have happened, because of how long it will have taken them to get anywhere. You know, like, I think at one point when they've got as far, you know, I mean, I don't, this is a part of history that I don't really know much about. You know, and I think it's interesting that, you know, this is, you know, English, and I know they refer to it as Britain, but in, you know, English, because it, you know, fundamentally was English, sort of colonialism, you know, because that's kind of how it started, in its kind of very early kind of iterations, really. And like, I didn't know that the Jacobite army came into England. I didn't know that. So like, when they're, I think they're down like in, they're in Carlisle, I don't know, it's, you know, they're not that far into England, but it is England nonetheless. And then they start to retreat, and like, it takes them 5 months to get from Carlisle to kind of just sort of south of Inverness, which, you know, is quite, it is a long way, but it wouldn't take 5 months, even with the state of British trains at the moment. So, you know, just how, like, drawn out it must have all have been.
And it's just so stark, like, you know, in those months, how the money that they were trying to gather is just like, you literally, it's not just about arms and weapons, like, they, you know, they're just starving.
Exactly.
It's just horrible. And like, even, you know, just nowhere to sleep, no fuel. It's just when it gets to that kind of last couple of episodes, you're just like, yeah, this is just complete and utter misery. But yeah, it is definitely, it's definitely quite a bleak time. But I think we really see Jamie, though, like, stepping into his comfort zone here. It's like, you know, that him trying to like woo the prince, that, you know, those first few episodes, he was just really like, this is not, you know, this is not what I want to do, where I want to be. I'm just stuck in a brothel all day long. But you really, it's almost like they're giving Jamie an opportunity now to like really step into this leadership role, which he just takes to so well. Right from the beginning, he's like, right, let's gather the men, and off he goes to his grandfather's house.
And I think, you know, it's interesting. I think, you know, I mean, I think they do this deliberately, like comparing him as a leader to Charles. You know, and how Jamie, you know, inspires the men, how he cares for them, how he, you know, trains them to try and, you know, for as much to help them survive as to win the war, and how Charles is vain and ineffective and can't make decisions, and when he does make decisions, they're the wrong ones, and you know, how self-serving it all is, and you know,
even just when he sits down and holds his glass out, like someone filming.
Yeah, over. exactly. And, you know, so I think it's really interesting how, yeah, like Jamie is framed very much as a leader throughout this whole, you know, even to the point where he sort of saves his men and says that he'll still fight. I think he's really, yeah, he's really interesting.
He shows the qualities of a true leader.
Yeah, absolutely. Way. Whereas, you know, I mean, there is no attempt to even show Charles in any kind of positive light at all.
It's a nice kind of from that episode where they do go to Jamie's grandfather. Beyond that, we're kind of reintroduced to lots of new characters, which is lots of old characters. Which is quite adds a bit of like comedic value, which I quite like. Apart from the whole relationship with Leary, obviously, like she comes back briefly.
One of many kind of minor villains who return, like her and Sandringham. Quite like the return of Leary,
because it's like I mean, Claire's horror when she sees her, she does that so well. Her face is just absolutely appalled. And obviously we see Colm again, who is just always mind-blowing. I mean, he's just so great. He's just such a great character, even though he can be deeply frustrating. I just think he's such a good actor.
I think that's one of the things, like, and you know, I suppose this is where it really deviates from the book, because obviously all of those characters are barely in the books. They're kind of just in the background. They don't get any sense of character. Whereas I think for me, that's one of the big things about this. I think that's why it really makes the second half of the season quite harrowing.
Yeah.
Because all these people are dying or being killed, and.
And you do and have in, some sort of a kind of like a grow, like an affection for them, even though. You
yeah,
know,
exactly. Yeah.
Like Colm is obviously very difficult, but like, and has had, you know, and we're still trying to figure out about the witch trial and things like that, which Claire brings up. But Gary Lewis is just such a good actor that he's just, his delivery is so good. And, you know, and then obviously with Dougal, like we're constantly like, love hate. Yeah. And Angus, we obviously adore, and you're just like, what are you doing to us with all of this?
Yeah, exactly. It really, I think they do it really well, and rightly so, because war is horrible and people die, and it's not just background characters who die. So it does really rip at you, I think, this series.
And with that war, that theme of war as well is going as, I really thought it was quite a good angle to bring back Claire's PTSD and just like, because you'd almost forget, like she's already been through World War II, and you're just like, of course, like all of this just starts like coming back to her constantly. I thought it was quite a good angle. You just that fear, you can almost taste it.
I think
when you're watching it.
That sort of the trauma, you know, that it's not just a battle and then you recover from it, that it's, you know, this is another way that, I suppose it's kind of a bit like, you know, although I don't agree with how they use rape, but how we inflict these traumas on one another. So, you know, obviously we as humans do terrible things to each other. And in terms of war, we don't really need to be at war. We don't need to be killing each other left, right and center, and that it isn't like a tidy thing, that, you know, it's like it seeps into your life. And I think Claire's post-traumatic stress is a really good example of that, of how you carry these, you know, these hidden wounds with you, and everybody carries these hidden wounds, not just people who fight, but everybody exactly. is affected. But yeah, I mean, it is a kind of a grim season. Like, there's lots of
there's lots to it. It just feels like when I remembered it before I rewatched it, I was like, oh yeah, they're just this is when they're just in Scotland and they're in camps all the time, and then Culloden happens, and but then you forget about the reintroduction of Sandringham, and you're like,
yeah,
when she has to give herself up in the church.
Yeah.
I just had completely forgotten about that.
And, yeah, they bring loads of characters back into this. The Sandringham one is, it's really horrible, but it kind of really makes me laugh, because just how Murta is in that scene, like kills Sandringham and then like goes down on one knee and presents the head. I just think this is just the wildest scene.
Yeah.
And it kind of makes me laugh. And then it really made me think about, you know, how people have made those clips, and somebody usually puts it on Twitter when it's Sean Bean's birthday, of him just saying fuck in all the things he's been in. And I feel like somebody needs to do like the similar thing, but it wouldn't have sound of just like Murta's kind of silent, judging, silent, frowning, scowling, furious face, because it's just the amount of things he conveys when Duncan LeCroix as Murta, when he doesn't have lines, like the bit where Claire is tending to Alex Randall, and Murta's there kind of to make sure everything's all right, and he's just there sort of silently,
just
this look on his face,
just pissed off all the time.
Amazing. It's just amazing. I just think he should get an award for just doing that look and it's in this second half of the season so much.
It is. He's some absolute classic scenes in Murta. Like when he's training the men with Jamie, and he's just like screaming his head off and shouting into their faces.
It's great.
Jamie's just standing there like completely calm. He's just losing his shit all the time. And then that quiet, like pissed off face is just,
that's my favorite.
So yeah. Yeah, he's got some great lines. And when he offers to marry Mary,
he offers to marry Mary. When he says he's going to stay with Jamie in the battle, it's just so lovely. And, part of me did suspect, as I'm sure for a lot of people, there are rules in films and television. If you don't see someone's death, then they're never really dead.
Yeah.
And like the fact that he sort of disappears, think maybe he's not dead. I just think he has loads of great bits in this. I always think he's like the heart of Outlander, Murta, like this sort of quiet, notices things, does the right thing, obviously deeply cares and loves Jamie, but that obviously then grows to Claire as well.
And he's always been like their biggest advocate almost from the start, like that. Even like when Claire is teasing Jamie at the Great Hall when they're having dinner, and then Jamie walks off and is a bit pissed off, and Murta's like, Leary's a girl, she'll be a girl until she's 50.
Yeah,
Jamie needs a woman, and that's you. Like he's almost like advocating for her and him too, and you're like, oh, Murta, you see a lot more than we thought you did.
Yeah, exactly.
Great. Definitely, it's like you don't see it, it's not happened.
No.
You didn't see it, it didn't happen. But yeah, it's it is a really there's some, as bleak as this half is, yeah, there are some really great moments.
Yeah, there is. Yeah.
And the victories, like Jamie's excitement with all the victories, that the small battles that they win is just,
yeah,
is a really nice kind of like sort of uplifting. You're almost like, and I have to admit, like, I want, like, throughout the whole thing, I'm always just like, okay, I know that she came back at the start. I know she came back, but something might change. Like, I know she did, but like every single episode, I'm like, something might change. Something still might change. And you're still, I'm just still like in that headspace being like,
the horrible dread of this second half, not just the dread of Culloden. But the dread of knowing, because you've already had that spoiler that she is going back through the stones.
Yeah. I wonder, did they ever ponder that? Be like, should we tell them from the very beginning?
Yeah.
I wonder, did they go, or should we? And since some genius was like, yes, let's keep them on their toes for 13 episodes or whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so it is, there's a lot in there, like a lot of grief, loss. Obviously we've got, we meet Jack again as well. Another great, a great few scenes with Jack Randall, as, you know, we see another side to him.
Yeah. And I think that's one of the things that Outlander does well, is that, you know, no character is two-dimensional. They're all, you know, like, you know, so I just like the fact that they don't ever let you think someone is just X, just like straightforward. Yeah. This is, you know, the baddie with no nuance to them, or this is the hero with no nuance to them.
So but I think Jamie has flaws and Claire has flaws. Like, it's
yeah, absolutely. Clear. So I think they do that really, really well. And I think, you know, the few bits that we have with Jack and his brother is a good example. But then, you know, they do it so brilliantly where when his brother dies and he just like punches him, like loving and caring for his brother caused him pain.
Yeah.
I mean,
so how do I get rid of it?
It's wild. Yeah. Jack Randall's a phenomenally terrible character, but brilliant character as well.
Brilliant, yeah. And there's a great scenes with him and Claire, like the one when she goes into the inn when he's drinking. They just have they have some great scenes together.
They do.
They're just so good. There's that chemistry is always there, whether it's love or hate.
Yeah,
they do it so well. They play the part. And then of course, like, where, like you said, like this theme of rape constantly coming up throughout, and obviously Jack's never going to let that go. And it was like, actually, do you know what I was thinking of when I watched that scene again, when he like described stuff to Claire? It brought me back to that scene in season one where he supposedly shoots Jamie. And you know when he pretends to shoot him, but there's nothing in the gun.
And
I just was like going, it was such a clever, it was such a, you know, it was the idea was that Jamie would just, you know, pull the gun away and it was supposed to be just a very clever thing. But it also, I was also going, he would never do that. Like, Jack would never just pick up a gun and shoot Jamie. Doesn't matter what the circumstances.
Yeah.
You know, he might shoot him in the kneecap or, like, you know, to take him down and cause him extreme pain. But there was never any chance that, like, Jack would ever, you know, he's his plaything. Like, it was never going to happen.
Yeah.
And you're just, I was just, like, reminded of that when him and Claire are just having that really dark conversation. His obsession with him is just, you know, goes to the end. And obviously then we hear, you know, with Sandringham and when Claire is held hostage and she finally finds out about what happened in France.
Yeah.
And Sandringham's like, well, I merely told them to rape you as I thought that would be better than being murdered. And it's just like, oh, it does feel like we're never getting away from this.
Yeah.
It's just like, it gets, it does feel like, now that we're rewatching it and talking about it, it does feel a bit relentless.
And you know, I know that it, you know, that would have happened a lot then, but I do think sometimes it's slightly, you know, it's just a bit overused, and obviously it continues in future seasons as well. But I think, you know, like the return of Mary as a character, with Sandringham, I think really, you know, I suppose in a way she's kind of, you know, she is the kind of polar opposite in a way to Claire, in that she is, you know, she's completely powerless. She's endlessly being promised to people, mm-hmm. married off, threatened, you know, being promised to be married to these people who she's never met, or these older men for you know, business deals. And she, you know, she is just completely powerless. And it's interesting that she has that. It's almost like a bit of an epiphany when they're trying to escape from Sandringham. And after that, it's like she does take more control by, you know, actually going to Alex and being with the person that she loves. No matter how difficult that's going to be. I do find Mary a bit of an annoying character though, but
yeah,
that's, you know, that's a side thing. But she's not the thing I hate, don't worry, we're saving that. I just find her a bit annoying, but I do think there is something like almost like where she kind of almost makes that decision that she's gonna sort of take control more. Like, I mean, she kills the person who raped her, and then, I mean, obviously we don't see them part, but she doesn't go back to her family. She goes and finds Alex and is with him. So she does kind of try to take back a little bit of control.
And even
what little she can.
Exactly. And even with even her, you know, agreeing to marry Jack, I know that it was her, you know, it is like his last dying wish, but she does very much, you know, she's like, well, this is the best thing for me. And
yeah,
you know, she doesn't sit there, you know, whining and being like, no, no, you know.
Yeah, she knows that, you know, she would be destitute if she didn't do that. So but I think it does show how difficult it must have been then for women, you know, like if you were poor, you know, you would have been destitute. Yeah, because it's been, yeah, I just think, yeah. And I suppose in a way, the kind of, you know, that kind of comparison with Mary, like Mary's helplessness, like pregnant and, you know, person she loves literally dying in there, and then, you know, having limited options, is kind of similar to what Jamie and Claire end up as at the end of the season. Like,
that's so true.
He kind of realizes, you know, he probably isn't going to survive, so what will that mean for her if she is pregnant in that place? And she will have been she would be the widow of a criminal. So like almost like that's their only option, that's their best, even though it's not great, but that's like that's their best option.
And it is like that scene is just so powerful, like that. Oh god, it's just so hard, you know, like when they're in that room, and like I totally forgot about the deed and him, you know, signing over the deed. And I thought they did that really well, that like going back to the present and back to the past, and you know, just that I just thought it was just so good. And I was like, oh yes. And her, when she, and her tear just falling on her name, and it was just, the whole thing was just so powerful. But like the whole time she's just standing there in the background, just with this face of fear. It's just like, I thought it was just so, maybe they will run away together, maybe it will change, you know. And you're still in that place, you're like, he cannot possibly do this. It's so good. But they are just left, you know, with nothing else. This is like the worst thing they can think of. Yeah. Even though at the same time, you do feel like Jamie's always been there. You know, like he brought it up in France and she was just like, what are you talking about? And it's almost like his head's always been there. Since then.
It's like she's the optimist and he's the pragmatist. She's always hoping that things might work out, and he is always assuming, like, planning for the worst.
Yeah. Yeah. And even, like, you know, him noticing that she's pregnant, and and he's like, she's like, how can you possibly have known this? Because he's like, you know, he's constantly like thinking about it. He's like, okay, well then this solidifies it then, because now you're definitely going. It's oh God, that scene, so it's so powerful.
Yeah, it is.
But I that goodbye still, I mean, it's still just so horrendous and awful and heartbreaking. But just like that, when they have that final really fast romp on the floor, you're like, this wasn't how it was supposed to be. This is not it.
Yeah, no. I mean, all of it is, yeah, it's really, it, yeah, it's just, yeah, it's just really bleak. I mean, even just how she looks. Just like, so like the fatalism of it all is just written across her face. And like, you know, and even at the end she's like clutching at, you know, like, he could go through the stones with her, and he's like, I can't, you know, and he can't even hear the sound, so, you know.
And it is, is it the same episode or the following one when Claire, Brianna and Roger are all there, and you're like, oh, they can all hear it.
Yeah.
It's very, you know, they bring that in like right away. It's like, oh, and
yeah,
like,
so
oh,
that's
it's
the,
very
that's
subtle,
the,
but
yeah, that's yeah. the clue. Yeah, that's the clue. Yeah. And I suppose that, you know, That was something that I forgot about this series, that Roger is in it.
Yes,
I forgot.
Is.
I don't know how. Maybe my mind just blanked it, like post-traumatic stress. Just couldn't let me bear to think about it. And I was just like, when he appeared, I was like, oh, forgot. I thought this was all in season 3, and he's here. Already. Although, to be honest, in
right
this
there.
Season 2, he's not that bad. Brianna is the far more annoying one of the two of them.
Yeah, it is. Oh my God, she is just unbearable.
She's unbearable.
He is actually very, like, quite reasonable.
Yeah.
And, you know,
it's season 3 where we start to hate him, but she's really.
Is.
Yeah, he's quite reasonable and sort of sensible, and she is such a brat.
Yeah, oh, she's just like, and I think, and that's why I think as well, when we do get to season 3, you're like, where did this come from? It's just like, you're just like, what happened? You've just had a complete personality transplant.
Yeah.
Who are you?
Yeah.
And because he does start off being like, just this like reasonable, fairly, you know, grand guy who's and because he's on Claire's side, you're very much like, oh yes, okay, great, so you're the one who's, and even he's like, you know, she believes it, even if you don't, she does, so could you just try and get, like, you know, some understanding or whatever. Definitely was you're right, when he first appears, I was just like, whoa.
And she and Brianna in this probably commits the cardinal sin for me of any adult child, which is to refer to your parents as mummy and daddy.
Yeah.
As far as I'm concerned, once you get past maybe the age of 6, I might even be being quite generous there. You shouldn't be calling your parents mummy and daddy. And as an adult, I have no respect for adults who do that.
Yes, I 100%
sorry
agree.
If I've upset. Please make your case for calling your mum and dad mummy and daddy when you are in your 20s. That as far as I'm concerned is a big giant no-no.
Yeah, she keeps going on about daddy this and daddy that, and yeah, she's just got such a chip on her shoulder about Claire, and you're like, okay, fine, but I don't know, it's
And I think at one point when, like, Claire starts to talk about like her experience of going into the past and being with Jamie. She says something like, oh, you know, just like any other bored housewife. Mm. And I find that really jarring because obviously she's supposed to be the modern one. She's supposed, you know, she's, it, we're in the 60s now. And she's trotting out a really sort of sexist cliche to her mum, but she's also trotting that out to somebody who was a combat nurse, and then by the time she's saying this to her, is a qualified doctor.
And there are
hardly any women who were qualified then to do that. And so I just find that really jarring when she says that, and maybe that was the intention of the writers, but I find that really, really jarring and really, you know, nasty, really.
I agree. It's definitely, she is one of the things I would say. So yeah, for our kind of like, what do we hate about? They're very, Brianna is very irritating. Roger is kind of, is tolerable, but even like when she's like, even when Claire is like pouring her heart out about this thing that she's kept inside her for 20 odd years or whatever, and Brianna's like, he's my friend and he'll stay, and you're like, you've known him for like a minute.
Exactly.
Why does he get to stay? This is your mother, like, who you've had been in a relationship for 20 something years, and this randomer who's been there for like a day, and you're like, he's my friend, he'll stay. So irritating.
Yeah, exactly. She's a total brat in it. And Roger is just, you know, he's just ordinary, but I'm, you know, I hate him because I know what's coming.
Yeah, I know.
He's tainted. He's tainted by my future knowledge.
But it's his complete, like, you know, siding with Claire, and we're like, we've got him on side straight away. That makes it worse, I think. But yeah, definitely we've got like Brianna acting like a spoiled brat, Bonnie Prince like a spoiled brat.
Yeah.
And definitely by the end of it, you're like, okay, someone needs to kill him. You're like,
I mean,
100% behind Claire and Jamie. You're like, yeah.
I mean, actually disappointed. They could have rewritten a history for me and just killed him.
Yeah.
And that would have been fine.
Very happy with that.
Yeah. I mean, they'd rewritten all loads of other history, like Sandringham didn't exist. So just kill him. Give us that satisfaction, because he is so irritating.
He's so irritating. And he's like, as well as that, he's that last line. When Claire is in the, in the present tense, and she's in visiting Culloden, the like museum, and she's looking up at him and saying like how they made him taller when he actually wasn't that tall.
Yeah.
And then she's like, what she says a great line. She's like, they made, you know, a hero out of him when really he, you know, basically he was just an idiot.
Yeah.
Which I thought was quite, it was a nice little touch.
I liked that. Yeah.
Yeah.
And you kind of think, you know, I mean, I don't know. I mean, he could have been, but you kind of think that's the thing. We've seen it happen in our own lifetime where we start to rewrite people's characters and rewrite their place in history. And we talk, you know, we saw it when the Queen died with the media just doing these blanket statements about how everybody loved her and how everybody supported and she was this amazing, and that becomes like the narrative going into the future. So you kind of think, well, actually, maybe in 200 years time, people will look back and go, well, that's what the record suggests, that she was this beloved person who did nothing wrong. And so you do kind of, you know, you do see how kind of that kind of bastardization of history but in this, he is not given a lot of love,
no,
to say the least.
No, like that last hope when Jamie goes in the middle of the night for the birthday, and he gets scared of the dark and turns back, and you just see Jamie's face going, this was literally our last hope.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
And I think I brought this up already in the last season, or the last episode, I just can't cope with the fact that they don't have a goodbye shag. I just can't cope with that. Like, proper, like, that they don't.
Yeah, it's just that horrible quickie.
That's just like, I just feel like, as I was watching it this time, I was like, no, no, right, that's it. There was definitely time. I felt like they both knew the date. And you're just like, oh, wait, Jamie, oh, look, it's, Jesus.
Well, they must have been having goodbye shags because she's pregnant. We don't get to see that.
It's not good enough.
Creators of Outlander, season 2 was a big letdown sex-wise. We all know it. It's what everybody said when it came out the first time, and our feelings about that have not changed.
No,
the quota of the ratio of sex to violence is far too big.
Yeah.
Season 1, nice, even match violence and sex. Season 2, lots of violence.
Tiny bit of sex.
I feel like we need to learn from that. Maybe we all need to learn in life. More, turn that quota around. More sex, tiny violence.
Less violence.
I feel like I might have just solved world peace.
Yeah, I feel like that we need to kind of make an announcement of that.
I know. Has anybody suggested that we just have more sex, less war? That sounds familiar.
That's a good t-shirt slogan. I think you need to change it.
We've got our first merch idea. More sex, less war, and then some kind of Outlander picture.
Yeah, definitely. I love it.
Let us know, listeners, would you buy that t-shirt?
I desperately want one. And they're like in small caps underneath, being like, we're talking about season 2 and you know it.
Hey, Ronald D. Moore. We're talking about season 2.
I don't know. I just feel like there was definitely, I could have had less of looking at that effing prince and just like a 7-minute sequence of the two of them having like a goodbye shag in a tent. Like, I just, like, there was definitely space for it. So when I was watching this year, I was like, no, I hate it. I hate the fact that they didn't have a kind of goodbye. And maybe it makes then that lead up to see in season 3, that bit, but do you know what? It doesn't actually. I take that back. It definitely doesn't. But I think we've touched on it there with like what we hate about. There are some quite strong feminist themes in this second half of the season as well. Apart from like the normal themes that we've mentioned. And you've already touched on some of them, like the Mary's powerlessness we've talked about.
Yeah.
We've talked about, again, we've talked about this, the theme of rape that's constantly coming up. But you touched on that scene with the English boy.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I just think, I understand, you know, I should stop excusing them. I don't understand it. But like they play these scenes as comedy, but you know, they play this scene like, you know, and I know they're sort of showing like Claire has orchestrated it and look, she's found a clever way to get this boy to give up the information they need to avoid a battle or whatever it is.
Mm.
But it's still using the threat of sexual violence against a woman to do that. Just because a woman is orchestrating that trick doesn't make it okay. And I just think, and again, they play it as like a bit of a joke, like the bit where I think she knees Jamie in the balls and...
Yeah, and then she bites his lip.
Yeah, and they kind of look at each other and it's like they play it as a joke and it's just like, this is actually a bit weird and creepy what you're doing. And I think, you know, I think to me it has like echoes of that scene where he beats her and how that's played for a laugh.
Yeah.
And so I just think tonally sometimes these feel really uncomfortable. for something that people talk about as a feminist show, they just have these moments that feel really icky. And that was one for me. I was like, rewatching it, I was like, oh, I've forgotten about this scene. This is a bit, ugh, don't like this. This is really cringe. I think that's a big one for me. But we have Claire, really coming into her own as a professional in this, like, you know, not just as like her being talked about as a healer, as she has in season one and earlier parts, like where she's the La Dame Blanche, but where, you know, the fact that she is a combat nurse and now she is needing to be a combat nurse again, and how she does that, and the importance of that, and how she's respected by, everybody, because she has expertise that they do not have. So I just think,
and the women, like the men, obviously, you know, she's known the men for like of Lolly or of the Mackenzie clan for such a long time.
Yeah.
And they already know what she's capable of, but it's when she just puts everyone to work, you know, boil the water.
Yeah. And sauce, explaining it all. Yeah. Yeah. Like when she explains why they have the honey water. And yeah, just that skill and knowledge. Mm-hmm. And how she is, of all of them, she's unfazed by the horrible things, you know, like the men that are coming in injured, and she's, because this is again, going back to that, this is knowledge she only she has, even other people who would have been doctors then would, their knowledge would be nowhere near what hers is. So it's just that, you know, like really showing her as this expert.
She just, nothing seems to, you're absolutely right. Like nothing seems to faze her. The only time she's really has fear is when it comes to Jamie or with the people she loves. And she's always got that like face of like, and until she sees him walk in the door, like every time.
After,
and then she's like, okay, there's some sort of relief, and that's even repeated again in like when they're in America. Same thing of like waiting for him to come back. There are some strong feminist themes in this.
I feel like just, you know, conscious of our ticking clock, and I just want, on, you know, some lighter notes, things that we enjoyed, you know, we talked extensively about the fashion in the first half of the season. The thing that's I like this from season one, and I don't think I mentioned it, but the glassware, the return of the Scottish glassware, I love it that the where it's got like the sort of bobbled stem, and I just love the glassware that they have. And so it's not only is fashion in a way, it's like, it just, there's the scene where they're drinking with, that's just like, I think it's with when she's drinking whiskey with Sandringham, and I'm just like, I do like the glasses that they have. Just like a little bit of light relief
from
all the murder and mayhem and carnage and rape. They do beautiful stemware.
Even in the middle of war, they're drinking out of fantastic.
Glasses.
I feel like nowadays, in the middle of war, we'd be drinking whiskey out of like a thermos. It feels like, you know.
Somebody would be passing around the crappy plastic cups.
Exactly. The camping mugs. It's like, no. We will be having glassware. It doesn't matter that we're in the middle of a war. And China teacups. Thanks very much.
Yeah, exactly.
But I remember that actually as well in season one, when Colm invites her for a drink at the head table. And I always remember looking at the glass of Hermes or the glass, you know, they're always drinking out of these.
Yeah, really, and the glass is always the same. And I just really like it.
Angular at the top. So it's like,
Really think it's great.
Fabulous.
A little light moment.
I found it, hard. Like I always talk about, like, I love all the layering in the Scottish accent, but it just gets very repetitive. Like, it doesn't really change. Like, when you look back at season one and her outfits in Scotland, they're very, very different. Like, this is like she's constantly trying to keep warm.
And because and they have to kind of, they do have to sort of show her getting a bit bedraggled as well. Yeah. Like the rest of them, because they're on the move all the time and they're outside all the time.
Exactly. And her, like, I mean, you can just see even the actors, they're like, it's raining again. Yeah. You know, like their hair, like Claire's hair is always like grim, like tightly, like held back. And actually, I was listening to a podcast with Sam Heughan this week and ran me about running, but he talks about the kilts because they were like, you know, when you're filming, you must have been wearing thermals under them. And he was like, we never did. He's like, we never wore thermals. He's like, there's no need. They're so warm. Yeah. He's like, we actually didn't need it. And I was like, God, I was thinking that, like, it would look, they just look so cold. They must be.
Yeah,
like...
but that sort of material, it's funny. I'm not going to, little insight into my life. I went to the supermarket at the weekend, but I'd been doing some gardening. So I had my 1960s vintage overalls on.
Of course.
But didn't have a coat on because when I went to the shop, it wasn't raining. And then when I came out of the shop, it was absolutely torrential rain. And my husband was like, oh, have you not got a coat with you? Are you going to get wet? And I went, no water gets through these overalls. I genuinely got home and I was dry. Like, my scarf and my hat was wet, but overalls impenetrable. And it's the same with, like, if you're wearing that sort of tweed.
Yeah.
And that tartan, it's so thick and densely woven.
Mm-hmm.
It is warm. It is really warm and, you know, it takes quite a lot. I mean, it will have been wet, I would imagine, with the amount of rain that they had and the mud. Yeah. But there's a lot. Her fashion doesn't really change.
I do
think the introduction of the kind of wrist warmer is what I'm going to refer to them as. Quite like the wrist warmers.
And even in present day, I'm not mad about a whole lot. Apart from, like, I mean, we could talk about Claire's wig as well, but it kind of gets me a bit, but I can see what they were trying to do. That when they're on the hill and she's at the end when they're by the stones trying to stop Gaelis, and she's wearing like a real big oversized coat with like boots on, and I'm like, oh, that's a bit of me. I love an oversized
and
coat.
I like that, and the scarf, and I think that's good, because I don't love a lot of her 60s clothes, especially the awful nasty nylon pajamas she has on at one
point. They're desperate.
The horrible like nylon quilty dressing gown.
Desperate, but she's having the dram with Roger. They're horrendous. As like, could they not have sourced something useful in silk or something?
I just feel like a woman who wore those clothes in, you know, 18th century Paris would not have returned to the 20th century and invested in a pair of powder blue nylon pajamas. Just don't feel like she would. I feel like they were very off brand for Claire.
Yeah. You like hit the nail on the head. And I literally only noticed it this time around. I was looking at those pajamas.
I know, this is the first time I hated them so
much. Oh my God, why aren't they in our hate list? They should be in our hate list.
They should be. So the most hated thing in the second half of season two are those pajamas.
They are desperate. I was just watching it going, oh my God, I hate the color. I hate the length,
the material,
the fit. It's just like, it stretches across her. I'm just like,
it's horrid.
She just wouldn't have worn them. She would have worn like a beautiful nightdress or one of those, you know, like a silk two piece or I don't know.
I'm with you. It's wrong. They're wrong. It's the one misstep of the wardrobe department. Sorry, wardrobe department, but it was a big misstep. You've made the hate list.
And the fashion and the wardrobe team never make the hate list on Outlander.
Never make the hit list. This might be the only time they make the hit list.
Yeah.
So sorry about that, wardrobe department. But, you know, next time, learn from your mistakes.
Yeah, that was a good hate, actually.
Yeah, I think that was, I think, and that feels like a good point to end on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, talking about bad pajamas.
time to get into
our much better pajamas. You'd never catch us in a pair of nasty nylon powder blues.
Yeah, no, not a chance in hell. But no, that was really enjoyable, and I cannot wait to get on to our season three. And
season
if you
three.
Want to follow us along, it will be part one, the battle joined to A. Malcolm.
A. Malcolm.
Yeah. See you then.
See you then. Thanks.